This is a Mexican Crossing Lines. Hello and welcome to a Mexican Crossing Lines with Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves.
I would say the morning of the 7th, because that's the morning. I'm backtracking in my head of like the things that played out, and it was the morning, the night of the 6th. I asked for the banquet room. We put some people in there, and I slept in the banquet room with them. And that's when Michael came in, and he's like, "L'Oreal, I need to talk to you." And it was really dark in the banquet room, so I didn't realize it was like 8:30 in the morning. I thought it was. I didn't go to bed until probably 5 o'clock that morning. And so anyway, he came and he said, pretty much everyone's out, blah blah blah. And he's like, "And Wes is gone." And I looked at him.
So here's why I'm asking her these questions, because I'm trying to figure out who put the person that everyone says dropped the ball in charge. I'm trying to find out why the person that claims, according to the Bismarck Tribune, to have found Mary Trujillo naked halfway down her body, except for a sweater, naked, sitting in her own filth, freezing, and in a state of horrible conditions of elder abuse on December 6th, who didn't report it until December 17th, on the same exact day that L'Oreal signs these invoices that go to the veterans for Standing Rock. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is they were talking about the strict leadership that is required. She talked for a while about how she had to reel in these veterans by yelling at them. She talked about a strict hierarchy of rules. She talked about respecting the way of the matriarch and peace and prayer. She was asked specifically by the Faith Spotted Eagle and the headsman to help with the security, to bring them back to peace and prayer. She was trying to weed out bad elements in her camp. She is personally aware of crimes that were reported to her by Von Bull Lodge, the head of the headsman security, and Bill Runningfisher became the head of her team of security. She committed so many errors along the way, which she herself admits to, in vetting people, in knowing who the people she is working with are, in following through with Veterans for Standing Rock on why she needed things, or you know what their understanding really was about what she was there to do, because there seems to be some contention about that, some confusion, if you will, disagreement, if you will. So I need to understand, what is the leadership structure? Who is the boss of you? Because there seems to be a leadership structure that is articulated here. And she is telling me that there was a split between the leadership structure of the leadership of the Vets for Standing Rock, between Wesley Clark Jr. and Michael Wood Jr. And I want to understand what the nature of that was. Who does she answer to? Who was she being given money by? Who was giving her orders? What orders did they give her? Was she following the orders of the tribe? Was she following the orders of Veterans for Standing Rock? Was she just whistling her own tune? What was going on here? So let's go back to what she says she was told.
I was like, "What?" He's like, "Wes is gone. Wes is no longer with us." He's like, he lost it, he's like, "Sully took him to the airport. He's supposed to be flying out this morning." And I said, "Oh, okay." He's like, "So he's no longer part of the organization." And
what did,
I said, okay.
What did he mean by he lost it?
That Wes lost it?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, Wes was on a spiritual journey. And he was trying to do his spiritual thing and trying to do other stuff as like investigative journalism is what I would call it, because he was trying to gather intel and trying to gather.
I want you to hear what she just said. She said that Wes was on a spiritual journey, but he was doing something else. He was trying to do investigative journalism, I guess you would call it. That's what she said. He was trying to do something that other people did not appreciate. He was trying to get intel on his own. He wanted to find out what was going on for himself, according to her. Okay, go on. Let's see what else.
Evidence of like what Morton County and Dapple and them were doing.
Oh, really?
And I specifically told Wes, I said, Wes, if you are on a spiritual journey, you need to focus 100% on that journey. I said, because you're not going to get what you're supposed to get out of it if you don't.
Why would she tell Wes, who said he was trying to gather intelligence and information, evidence of the crimes committed by Morton County, of the crimes being committed by Dapple, and she said, no, no, go back to your spiritual journey, focus on prayer, peace, spirit, don't gather any information, don't try to find anything out. What she's essentially saying is the reason why this was upsetting, his behavior was upsetting, why he was asked to leave, was because he didn't just focus on being in peace and prayer. And didn't she tell us earlier that it turned out that Phyllis was sending these medicine men, Phyllis Young, the person she was coordinating with, L'Oreal Blackshaw, come to find out later when she was talking about Christine, the woman that she doesn't like, remember? Come to find out later that the person that was sending these medicine men, which is not traditional, according to L'Oreal, she told him, Wes, you don't go talk to medicine. Medicine men don't come and talk to you on your spiritual journey. You go and find them. Come to find out, she says it was Phyllis that was sending them. And it seemed out of place and strange to her. Now she's yelling at Wes Clark Jr. Wesley Clark Jr. A soldier. A decorated soldier. Don't stick your nose where it ain't wanted. Go back to your peace and prayer. This is really strange. Okay, go on.
If you're here for that, fine, do that, but leave all this other stuff to me and Michael. And at that point, he agreed. But this was before he yelled at me and whatever. And so he was still doing what Wes does, I guess. And that was just trying to, I don't know, be taking pictures and being involved in that way. And so it was at some point we had to kind of babysit him too, because he wasn't getting any sleep. Wes did not get any sleep. So, you know,
that's a little condescending. They had to babysit Wesley Clark Jr. Wow. That's crazy. Like, have you ever had to get anyone to babysit me?
No.
I've never had to get anyone to babysit.
Only when you had a broken leg and needed help.
That's true, but I couldn't walk or go to the bathroom by myself or anything. This is different, though. This is a grown-ass man. This is a man who is a veteran, who came, who inspired. Wesley Clark Jr. greatly inspired. Because I know, you know, Michael Wood Jr., I mean, he's a great guy, but he's not a veteran. Is he?
I get the two mixed up.
He's the Baltimore police officer. I don't think he's a veteran. In fact, I think he told me in his interview that he's a civilian, you know? And I thought that everyone that was out there, because I had this experience. When you go out to the camp, there you do get a lot less sleep just because of the nature of being out there. Needing to get up earlier and get, you know, doing what you're going to do at the camp. Being there is about doing work, whether you're there reporting like Duke and I and our crew were, or you're just there at the camp visiting. Either way, you should be helping. You should be self-sufficient. You should be bringing what you need and some stuff for other people. You should be bringing donations to help support the camp. That's always been the understanding of the camp. That's always my understanding of what the camp was. So I just found it really interesting that they're treating Wes this way because he was taking pictures with his phone. Didn't y'all take pictures with your phone? Because he was trying to get intelligence of the crimes committed by the police and DAPL. I would think they would want that help. I don't understand.
What happens when you don't get enough sleep, you start to get paranoid. You know, you start to, you're not thinking correctly.
What kind of things, what kind of things did he do that made you think he was paranoid?
At one point, Wes told me that God is talking, was talking directly to him.
Yeah? Okay.
So I was like, whoa, Wes. Whoa.
Like he was hearing voices?
No. He literally said that God is talking to him.
Okay. And what other things did he do that was acting like paranoid?
He was wearing a bulletproof vest because he said people were out to get him.
Is talking to God, if you believe in God, or the Creator, or Tankashila, or whatever you call the Creator, okay? Is talking to the Creator not what she is promoting in the peace and the prayer part, especially the prayer part? Don't the people out there constantly talk to the Creator? And aren't they in communication and in unity with the Creator at all times? I just find that interesting that is one of the examples given of Wesley being paranoid that he was talking to God. It's just odd to me. All right, let's listen some more.
Oh. Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah.
Anything else?
So, that's just from me, my personal witness. He showed me his bulletproof vest. He told me personally that God was speaking to him. And I don't know what he may have said to Michael or what was play out with him and Michael or whatever.
So
but,
were you concerned for his mental state?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And did you communicate that to Michael?
Yeah, I told Michael that.
Did you communicate it to anybody else?
Nope, just Michael.
Okay. So you didn't tell Phyllis that he might be a little unstable?
I didn't talk to Phyllis at that point. After Phyllis embarrassed me in the pavilion by saying she's relieved of duty, and I was like, whoa. I didn't speak to Phyllis.
Well, did you tell Faith Spotted Eagle? Because you trusted her, right?
No. I didn't think that was something that we can... I'm not really concerned. I'm sure it probably would have concerned her, but how I would put it is a leadership problem between me, Wes, and Michael.
So when
in our organization,
when Wes was asked to go, you weren't there.
No. Michael informed me that morning.
Okay. And then after they left, you continued with the cleanup.
Yeah.
But there was a conversation, apparently, where Russell says he overheard Vaughn saying that you guys were just going to torch what was left because it was in the way and you needed to get rid of that. Is that accurate?
We were speaking in regards to all of that gear that had been left, and there were donations as well that were left in that eastern outpost where we had those three military tents on the eastern side of the camp. And Vaughn said, a lot of it's just junk. A lot of it's trash. He's like, we need to just torch that. And that's what he referred to as that trash.
Okay. So that's kind of an important part right there. I asked her, I said, Russell, this Mary Trujillo's grandson, the woman that we've been talking about, who's been kidnapped, whose daughter is in jail, accused of elder abuse by Bill Running Fisher. And I said, he said that your buddy Vaughn, the guy she trusts so much, Bill Running Fisher's cousin, the guy that told her about all these crimes that were being committed, the guy that caught Mowgli with all the human ashes of Bill Higgins' mom on him, the guy that knows all of these connections, that guy, he's the guy that said this. You know, he's the one, right? Go ahead and play a little bit more.
The junk.
Okay, okay. Because it was the, wasn't it the intent of the veterans that...
Okay. So she calls it junk. She does not deny that they did in turn intend to burn something. Something. She just said, oh, well, Vaughn said it was going to be these things over here and this junk. But when I asked her about burning what was left behind, she didn't say, oh, no, 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 no. We wouldn't do that. She said, it was junk. It was just junk. All right, let's hear.
They were going to leave that stuff that they left behind there for the camp? Or what were the instructions?
There was apparently some donations were brought in, and those donations were to get distributed. But when that blizzard hit, like, one of our tents collapsed. Everything was covered in snow. And like I said, some veterans had left their personal gear behind, like their own stuff that they brought, like their personal clothes. And those were still in the tents. But aside from their personal stuff, the other stuff, the donations is what was going to get left for camp. And so, yeah.
So, what were there any other formal or either informal or formal instructions that you had as from the Veterans for Standing Rock, Michael, and his crew, as to what you were supposed to be doing there in terms of security? What exactly were the?
No. Michael left that to me.
I see, but you were.
Notice that she did not say that. She didn't say that she was not working on security or that security wasn't part of her job. She was just there to do cleanup. She's telling me Michael left all of that up to her. And I can tell you right now, Michael Wood says he never told her to do anything with security. So this is really weird. Spoiler alert, I just told you something that Michael told me. We'll be getting to those interviews. I have more interviews coming for you. But this is just strange to me because this whole time, this is a person that's the head of security. This is the person that everybody mentioned that they gave this report of elder abuse to. She herself says that Michael Wood appointed her right before he left after Phyllis embarrassed her. He came and he came back with a contraband against Phyllis and said, this is my person. This is who I'm leaving in charge. If there's a problem, you talk to her. And yet, she's not really clearly aware of who's on her security team or who's going to burn what or what's going on. Go on.
Also, you were also coordinating with Faith Spotted. What was it? Spotted
you? I wasn't really coordinating with her other than when she asked if I could assist with the security, because they initially asked me, they said, when I first got there, they said, well, you're the sergeant major of all of these veterans coming in. What is your purpose? What are you guys going to do here? And I told them that my direct orders to our veterans that we were bringing in, the registered veterans, was we will follow peace and prayer as per the guidance of the elders. There will be no direct or indirect action of any kind and no agitation. So they said, well, that's how we're trying to operate, you know, at the camp. And I said, and that's what I mean, what I said, you're the elders. I respect you. I will, of course, listen to you and your guidance and what you want me to do. And so they said, well, you pretty much got it, you know, peace and prayer, no direct action or indirect action.
Were you giving orders for your security team to go and do wellness checks? Like, you know, Bill Renningfisher and Melania Stoneman were saying that they were doing?
Well, that's the thing is, like, Billy just kind of self-appointed himself to do that. You know what I mean? He just, he said he had medical experience, and so he just kind of ran with that on his own. And like I said, there was an incident in which I needed the assistance of some veterans, like super, super early one morning to do a weapon sweep. And
when did Bill Renningfisher tell you that he had medical experience?
When I first met him, it was before the weapons sweep, which was a Saturday morning, probably a Friday, that's Friday.
Friday what?
Was it the 4th? 5th?
Okay, so
Friday
okay,
the 4th.
The 4th would have been, Sunday.
No, well, whatever that day, the Friday fell on. I believe it maybe was...
The second. Okay.
Yeah.
So on December 2nd, he kind of self-appointed himself, and he told you that he had medical background.
When he introduced himself, that's what he said. He said he had a medical experience, and he'd like to assist in any way that he can. And
How come he didn't join the medic team?
Because apparently the medical team that was on camp was very specific in who they wanted to work with.
Oh.
And they wanted to clear their own people, which I understand, you know. And they weren't sure if the veterans were going to be staying or whatnot. So they were... From my understanding, the medical team is they're very specific and as to who they want working within that medical group.
Right. So they reject. So that was really a strange exchange. Did you hear that? Now, apparently, ever since December 2nd, when she first met Billy Renningfisher, he told her she was a medic. Earlier, she said that when all she knew, she didn't know anything about him. All she knew was what Vaughn told her, and what Vaughn told her was that he had a company and that he was a U.S. Marshal or something like that. But now she says that since the very first time she met him, he told her he was a medic. And I'm like, a medic? Because nothing about Bill Renningfisher's history or his company says medic. It says that he was in law enforcement with law enforcement types of backgrounds. But what's really strange is that here she again repeats that he self-appointed himself as her medic team, whatever. I think he called himself a platoon leader of sort of something like that. I don't know. But what's really strange about it is that she again refers to the fact that he appointed himself. When I ask her, was there official commands coming to you from Michael Wood Jr. about how you're supposed to do the security stuff? Was this something, you know, these security wellness checks that you're going out and doing sometimes in the middle of the night? You know how invasive that is? A wellness check. I mean, wellness checks. If you call the police right now and have someone go do a wellness check at someone's house, that's a pretty invasive thing. I mean, in order really to do a wellness check, it's not just something like, I haven't heard from my friend for a week, so I'm going to call the cops and have a wellness check done on them. When you order a wellness check on people, it's very invasive. I mean, you really need to think that that person is dying or in danger in order to do something that invasive, because otherwise, whoever ordered that wellness check is not going to be very beloved by their family or friends for doing that. But this guy, he self-appointed himself to go and do these wellness checks in people's tents and people's tarpies. And she doesn't seem to have a problem with that. And he never mentions any of this. He acted his entire interview like he didn't even know L'Oreal Blackshaw. That's really weird to me. Don't you think? All right. Let's go. More.
Rejected his assistance, basically.
I don't know if they rejected it. I know that, like, any other medical team that would come in, they, from what I understand, is that they weren't being very cooperative with them.
Okay.
So.
What does that mean, actually?
The way I can only describe it is kind of like in high school where everyone's kind of got a click.
Yeah.
And, you know, when someone else comes in and wants to help, and then they're like, no, we don't want you a part of our click, I guess.
Okay. Okay, so anyway, he joined your team on...
But that was just it. I didn't have a team. I didn't really have...
Yeah, you said he helped you round up a bunch of people. And then,
oh yeah, that was the morning. That was a he introduced himself Friday to me, saying he had a medical. He'd want to help in any way that he can, and I said, okay, great. You know, and I said, I'll let you know if I need you. And it happened early Saturday morning when I was called and asked if I could get a group of veterans to do a weapon sweep of American Horses Camp and Red Warrior.
Okay. And did you make that decision, or did somebody ask you to do that weapon sweep?
Somebody called me, asked me. I don't make decisions on my own like that. That's not my call.
Who made that call?
They spotted Bear and Orville Looking Horse that called me on my cell phone.
Okay.
Okay. Did y'all hear that? I just want to stop that and make sure everybody heard. She doesn't make that call, she said. I don't make those calls. Okay, all right, you don't make decisions for yourself. But a minute ago, she told me Michael Wood Jr. left all the decision-making to her. Now she's telling me, I don't make these decisions. Someone else makes these decisions. Who makes these decisions? Faith Spotted Eagle and Arvel Looking Horse. Those are some pretty big names for her to bring to the fore as being the people that told her to do the things that she's been doing, which she says she's been letting other people self-appoint themselves to do without her permission. I don't know if this is weird to anybody else, but it sounds really strange to me. Go ahead.
All right. So did they suspect that there was some weapons?
Apparently there's already been some suspicion with JR American Horses Camp for a while. And they had been trying to work with him and bring him back into our traditional ways and the peace and prayer and the no direct action or indirect action. And I guess it didn't work. So
what does that mean? What was he doing? Was it weapons? Was it?
I don't know. I can't. You'd have to ask them. Okay. All I can tell you and vouch for myself is saying, I'm an urban Indian who is trying to come back to her ways, my traditional ways,
sure.
And I'm taking guidance from elders.
Right.
And when elders tell me or ask of me something, I will do it.
Right.
All they ask is if I can assist with a weapon sweep, get some of my veterans to assist their security with a weapon sweep, and I said, yes, I can do that.
I was just wondering if they briefed you in any way on what was going on.
If the elders tell her to do something, she'll do it. But if Phyllis tells her she's relieved of duty, she laughs at her because that's not her boss. It's kind of selective. It seems selective to me who she listens to, who's her boss, who's not her boss. I don't know. It's very selective.
Going on. And
it was the other security people that had briefed me on that other stuff.
Oh, I see. From your own team? From your own team?
No. It was Vaughn. It was the Hickman security team, which Vaughn oversaw.
I see. So...
And that was the official, from my understanding, that was the official security for It should have been for the camp, but it was also for the headsmen, because they were going by traditional ways, traditional law, which the headsmen are the ones who make those type of decisions in accordance with the elder guidance and approval.
So Faith spotted Eagle. Does she coordinate at all with Phyllis?
I have no idea. You're going to have to ask her.
Do you have any of the, do you have Faith
spotted
Eagle's
number? How does she not
Eagle's
have
number?
Any idea?
I do, but...
How does she... I don't know. I think that's strange. All right, moving on. Because I talked to Michael Wood Jr., I was like, you know, who were the people at the tribe that you guys were looking to for guidance, advice, leadership? And I said, you know, L'Oreal told me it was Faith Spotted Eagle, Faith Spotted Eagle. She mentioned she was coordinating with Phyllis. She's like, how? Phyllis and Faith Spotted Eagle work hand in glove. That's what he said to me. So, I don't understand how she doesn't know. Anyway, moving on.
I have to ask her if I can give that number out.
I would really appreciate it if you could. And I guess you wouldn't give me Phyllis's or couldn't talk to her because she was kind of rude to you. But
well, I have Phyllis's number as well, but I'm the type of person that I don't give out phone numbers unless I get permission from the other person.
Totally understand.
And I would still give Phyllis that courtesy.
Of course.
She's still an elder, and the way my mother brought me up is, regardless of what someone has done to me, I still have to have that respect for them as an elder.
Well, if it's not too uncomfortable, I would appreciate it, because I'd like to be able to ask them some questions, too, about what their understanding was of what the veterans were supposed to be doing there, and were you guys in compliance with the elders of the tribe, you know, and the tribal council too, you know.
Well, from what I have understood in this whole process, and it's come bit by bit, is the tribal council and the tribe at that point were no longer in charge of the camp, because they were in the beginning. And that they were in the beginning, and then when the sacred horn came in and they lit the fire for the sacred horn, it became a traditional camp in which the headsmen and the elders oversaw the dealings of the camp. And so it kind of removed the tribal council and the tribe from that. Does that make sense? That's my understanding of it.
Okay. So basically, the tribal council turned over that responsibility to the headsman.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a question about how Bill Running Fisher, as well as Melanie Stoneman, connected you to Chase Iron Eyes, because they told me that.
I remember that coming in at 1:37 into your interview with her.
Yeah, she brought it up. He didn't bring it up in the conversation, but he sent me texts saying that, and he told me, both of them said this, that you were appointed by the guy that was now the leader out there, who was Chase Iron Eyes, and, you know, that's all they really knew about you. And he's the person that appointed you, and,
wow,
and
you dropped the ball,
and then you were asked to leave the camp.
Oh, wow. No. I didn't even know Chase was the community leader at that point until I came back. Before I went home on the 29th, a few days before that is when I found out he was a community leader, and that's the first time I actually ever met him.
You had already been appointed to that position of leadership on December 6th, and that you already had ties to Chase Iron Eyes because he had appointed you.
No, because I've never met Chase until probably the 22nd, I would say, or 22nd.
The 22nd of December?
No. Yeah.
Wow, that's really far from December 6th.
Exactly. I didn't even know about Chase on the 6th. I don't know where they're getting their information from. People shouldn't talk about what they know unless they specifically ask that person. So unless they specifically ask Chase that, and I'm pretty sure he's going to deny it because Chase and I never met until the 22nd. And the only reason why I met Chase on the 22nd was because I wanted to discuss with him that secondary location that everyone was talking about that the camp was going to move to, and I wanted to move my veteran tent up there and kind of like break trail to get everyone to start moving to that secondary location.
Sure.
And someone had told me that he had the blueprints because it was supposed to be an eco village. They had a they had a whole blueprint for it, you know, where geothermal showers were going to be located and things like that. So out of respect, I approached him and asked him what his thoughts on me wanting to move my veteran tent to that secondary location and in that capacity. And he thought it was a good idea at the time. He said that he would get me blueprints and he would start working with me in that aspect. Mm-hmm. So that's as far as Chase appointing me. Nobody appointed me to anything. I was asked by the elders, and that's what I went off of.
Faith Spotted Eagle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I didn't make any decisions on my own.
Her confirmation. And is she with the council, or how is she recognized?
She's a spiritual elder.
At the camp?
Yes.
Does she have any relationship to the council at all? I'm trying to understand.
I don't know.
I'm trying to understand if she's part of the recognized leadership. Where's Faith Spotted Eagle from? Could you tell me?
I believe she's from one of the sister tribes.
The sister tribes? Which one?
I think Yankton.
Yankton?
Maybe. Somewhere. Forgive me. I know she told me, but she said it in our native language, and, you know, it kind of, like I said, I'm still learning my ways again. I'm not for the first time in some aspects of it.
Right. Okay.
But you have to understand. Are you Native, or are you?
I am an Indigenous person. I have Mexican blood, so yes, I am of this continent. My people are of this continent. First Nations people.
Did you hear that noise?
Huh?
There was a beeping noise.
Oh yes, everybody's trying to call me, but I'm not answering either.
Yeah, that's on my phone is too. Well, then you know that within Indigenous communities, we have our spiritual elders who aren't connected politically to, like, the tribal leadership, the elected tribal leadership. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely, of course.
Okay, so that is my understanding of where Faith comes in. She's the spiritual guidance and the guider. The spiritual leader in that aspect, but not politically connected to tribal leadership. That's my understanding of it. She may be, or she may be not. I don't know. I don't ask for stuff like that. She's very well respected.
I'm sorry. I was like, I don't understand. Well, of course, we don't understand each other's, you know, hierarchy. So that's why I'm asking, because I was under the impression from what you said that Faith Spotted Eagle asked you to do this, to return the camp to peace and prayer, and that this...
Not to return it to peace and prayer, to help assist in that aspect of it, and because their security was already trying to do that.
Okay, so that they were... So that she, you know, she asked you to assist in this, but that... I thought that she was asking on behalf of camp leadership or tribal leadership at Standing Rock, or
camp leadership, because she's a part of the camp leadership that is in play, that was in play now, that's the traditional side, because the, like I explained earlier, from what my understanding is the tribe and the tribally elected leaders were initially in charge of it, but then have stepped back when the traditional law came in with the sacred horn.
Right, but you said that they kind of turned over that responsibility to the headsman, so there must have been, you know, like a, okay, you know, you guys do this now, and we're not going to do that anymore, kind of a deal, right?
Say that again?
You said that the tribal council and chairman, they sort of turned over that responsibility to the headsman.
I would say that that's how it happened, from my understanding.
Right. And so
from my understanding, that's how it happened, and it may not have.
And you said that Faith Spotted Eagle and the headsman, they were basically the leadership that were making the decisions.
At the camp. When you put it like the colonized way, I guess, is that yeah, that would be a leadership. In the traditional ways with which we were.
I'm really dizzy. Like, I feel like I have whiplash from the different names that she throws out. It's like, who's in charge? Is anybody in charge? Are you in charge? Did someone leave you in charge? Did you have instructions? Did the leadership, whoever it is, did they tell you what to do? Did they let you choose to do whatever you wanted? And I've gotten so many different answers. I'm like, what is she talking about? And it's like, now she's like, well, I guess if you want to think of it in the colonized way, you just told me about military leadership. You just told me about listening to the elders. You just told me about following what the headsman told you. You just told me that you don't make decisions by yourself, that the people that told you were the spiritual leaders of the camp, and that was Faith Spotted Eagle and Arvo Looking Horse. All of that. And then I ask you about the structure of leadership, and you're like, yeah, well, there really isn't any. What? I'm so confused. Okay, continue. I don't know if this is me.
Traditionally, everyone is equal. But there are some that are more respected and more listened to than others. And those are usually our medicine men and our spiritual guiders, like Faith.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would explain that when you say leadership. The headsman...
no official capacity then?
The headsmen do take guidance and leadership from the elders. The spiritual leaders, the spiritual elders. Because there are some that are more genuine than others.
Sure.
In the way they live their lifestyle. You know, and how they help the people.
Uh-huh.
And that's who Faith and Orville are.
So are you saying there really wasn't any communication from these camp leadership, either of the headsmen or of Faith Spotted Eagle, with the council or the chairman?
I don't know. I don't know. You'd have to ask them. In any capacity, everyone was trying to work together. But as far as major decisions and calling police and DIA and whatnot, as we say in the military, that's above my pay grade.
Okay.
So
there was no understanding when you were left in charge of security for the veterans.
I wasn't in charge of security. I was never in charge of security.
I just said that when they left you behind, they wanted you to work...
For the veterans for Standing Rock, with yeah. our little vets, yes. I was still in charge of the vets that were left behind, as Veterans Stand for Standing Rock. Not in the capacity of camp or of tribal leadership or any of that aspect. It was just as Veterans Stand for Standing Rock.
Okay. Wait a minute. Okay, now my head is hurting. Okay, she said she was only head of security for the veterans, for her veterans, for the Standing Rock veterans. Didn't she jealous that she was made of head of security for the entire camp? It's part of her, it's part of what her statement was in her video from December 18th. And didn't she say that she was asked by the headsman and Arvo Looking Horse and Faith Spotted Eagle to go and take her veterans and sweep the camp for guns, and that she talked to Michael Wood about it, and that Michael Wood thought it was a good idea? I can't keep track of
yeah, I can't keep track of her roles, for she's all over camp. Now she's just in charge of a few people. All of a sudden it dropped.
I'm in charge of everything. I'm in charge of nothing. This seems to be a very routine thing with all Bill Renningfisher, Melanie Stoneman. I am a medic. I do this. I do that. I do nothing. I'm just a dishwasher. Yeah. I don't know anything. I don't know anybody.
There's nothing
I didn't
to
report
see here.
Anything. Yeah. She made the phone call. She made the phone call. Mm-hmm. I didn't make any phone calls. They wrote the report. I don't have a notebook. I was like, yeah. What is going on? Ah! Okay, let's try this one more time.
But I eventually disassociated myself from the Veterans Fund for Standing Rock on December 18th. And at that point, I told my guys that, too. I said, I am no longer the Sergeant Major. I am no longer associated with Veterans Fund for Standing Rock. I said, so you guys are free to make your decisions as to what you want to do with your time.
But you said that your security team was working with the people at the camp to do security checks on everyone. They asked you to go and do a gun sweep or something like that.
And that was initially.
Yeah.
Yes. On the morning of Saturday,
it wasn't just the vets. It was everyone, because you guys went through the Red Warrior camp and, right?
Yeah. It was.
So if your team had found a person that was having a heart attack or that had just shot someone, you would have reported it to the police, right?
I'm sure they would have. Like I said, that was a security decision. All we did was help assist. We were just extra people. We were extra bodies.
Right. Okay. That wasn't my question.
Security. It's just the security in that.
That wasn't my question. My question is, you're trying to wash your hands of being responsible for this action that took place at the hands of one of your, the person that put together your security team, that was heading up your medical and security team, Bill Running Fisher, the same guy that is on these invoices totaling over $131,000. I'm asking you, how did you not report this crime, which is listed in the Bismarck Tribune in a report that was given to the Morton County Sheriff's Department 11 days after it occurred? How is it possible you know nothing about this when you were the head of security and your guy, Von Bull Lodge, was telling you, the cousin to Bill Renningfisher, all of the things that were happening at the camp? How is it possible that you billed the Veterans for Standing Rock all of this money, but you had no responsibilities, no power? You couldn't do anything. You didn't know anything. And then I asked her, hey, but you weren't just security for the veterans. You told me that from the very beginning. The very first thing that happened, as she explained to you, and I went through it with you. I walked you guys through it. I don't know if you just joined us. We're listening to L'Oreal Blackshaw. But I said, listen to the sequence of events of how she told it. She told it that Faith Spotted Eagle came and talked to her. And that she told her that she didn't want all the veterans to leave because they were afraid of what would happen if all the veterans left at once. They were afraid of what would happen to the camp. So they asked her to stay behind with a couple of her veterans, and then it became a group of her veterans to help with security at the camp, in addition to which she would be helping with cleanup. And Michael agreed. Remember she said that? Now she's trying to tell us, oh, she was only doing security for veterans. She had nothing to do with security for the camp. And it's like, But wait a minute. You told me that you were immediately asked to do the security for the camp, and you were doing weapon sweep of the entire camp, and that you went into the Red Warrior camp, and that you got rid of all the weapons or whatever you were doing over there. What they did was get rid of the Red Warriors. And that's what really happened there. But my question is, how are you trying to shirk your responsibility here? There is a woman in jail. There is an elderly person in the hospital. How do you respond to that by, not my problem? I don't get that. I don't understand that. Mm-hmm. Continue, A.
And how how me and my guys helped assist in that was we came at that in a traditional sense. My friend, who is a pipe carrier, went with them to offer to smoke the peace pipe before any weapon sweep had taken place. But American Horse and most of his guys weren't even in their camp, so they went ahead and did the weapon sweep then. And then when we got to Red Warrior, we asked who the leader was of that little group, so they brought some guy named Smurf, and my friend offered her Chinupa her peace pipe with him, and we smoked it with him, and then after that he agreed to let us in and do the weapon sweep. The women swept the women's tents, and the men swept the men's tents, and they did it in a peaceful and a respectful way.
Okay. And so, is there anything that you want to tell me that I forgot to ask you about that you think is important, that you were like, oh, I have to tell her this, but I didn't ask you about?
No, not really.
All right. I think that was pretty much the end of her interview. She kind of freaked out at that point, mostly because she named a lot of names that she wasn't sure she should have named. And I think it started to dawn on her at the end of the interview that, oh my God, I just gave a lot of names of people and maybe I shouldn't have given those names. But here's the thing. Here's the thing that's bothered me this entire time, because I told her I would wait until she got me people's names or had a chance to notify them. But I also told her I'm not going to hide any of this evidence during an investigation of an elder woman's abuse that has Kathleen Bennett in a jail. This is urgent. This is not something that we can just sit and wait and see what happens down the road. Maybe L'Oreal will get Blackshaw will get back to me, and maybe not. There is a woman in a jail, and an elder woman with dementia who probably has a deterioration of her condition due to the fact that she's not in close quarters with the people that know her best. People with dementia get very, very agitated if you change things about their life, if you make things they're not used to happen around them. It deteriorates their condition. They have to be in a highly supportive living environment with people that know what they want, that know what they like, and that know how to take care of them the best. And the woman that can do that the best is in a jail because of the lies of Bill Running Fisher, Melanie Stoneman, L'Oreal Blackshaw, and a lot of other people. Because as you heard her tell you, she didn't know. She did know about that. She did know about this elder abuse. And I also asked her, I said, is there a person, when you were at the casino on December 6th, did you have an opportunity, did you have the means to see Mary Trujillo? Were you able to see her and Kathleen Bennett at the casino? Because if you could, that would be very helpful. And I want to play a video for you of December 6th. You know, because Bill Running Fisher, he lost this elder woman, Mary Trujillo. He put her on an ambulance, he claims, which is a total fabrication, and that took her to the casino. Now we know from L'Oreal Blackshaw that Phyllis Young's assistant, Christine, came and asked for a room and then proceeded to get a room for them. Here they are in a hallway, which is what exactly Kathleen And her son had told me what Russell and Kathleen said, that she ended up sleeping on the floor in a hallway and her mother was on a cot. And in a moment, we're going to bring on the phone the veteran who shot this video. So I want you to listen while we watch. This video was taken by a veteran that went to Standing Rock of Mary Trujillo. Her story pans out. Her story checks out. She said she went to the casino with her mom. And look, here's a video of her at the casino.
Oh, my grandfather's Red Cloud. My great-grandmother was a survivor of Wounded Knee Massacre. Russell Means is my mom's first cousin. And Billy Mills is also my mom's first cousin. He was a track star in the Olympics.
I met him.
You did? Yes.
Yeah, I did.
And I was just telling her a little bit about
everything. My phone just died.
We're going to take a half-hour break from the story, let you listen to some music, and return in 1.5 hour for more of this story.